True Green is the easiest and most affordable way to get a beautiful lawn. All you have to do is water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, among others. They'll do all of that so you can do literally anything else. You have better things to do with your free time than focus on your lawn care. Let True Green take care of all the hard work it takes to get a great lawn while you take care of everything else on your to-do list. You can trust True Green to give you the best lawn because they are the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. They offer a satisfaction guarantee, and they have a verified best price promise, which gives you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. Think about how hard it is to manage our fantasy baseball teams. You need all the time you can get to put in waiver wire claims, fab bids, send out trades, and set your lineups. You'll have that extra time when True Green is taking care of your lawn. You do you, let True Green do your lawn care. Visit truegreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people, guaranteed.
Welcome to the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast from CBS Sports.
High drive, center field, hit the wall, grand slam. This is magnificent.
Got a fantasy question? Email fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Get ready to win your league.
Where fantasy becomes reality.
Now here's Frank, Scott, Chris, and Adam.
And just like that, we have a no-hitter on consecutive nights in baseball for the first time since April 30th and May 1st, way back in 1969. This time, my Bronx Bombers, baby. Welcome into fantasy baseball.
Sorry, what was the? I'm confused at what was the stat?
That was the first time consecutive no hitters have been pitched since April 30th and May 1st, back in 1969.
I thought you were doing a bit how long it's been since the most recent no hitter.
No.
Because it's been, a whopping 20 hours.
We'll get into
between no hitters.
We'll talk about that on more of a macro level too, because I don't want to take anything away from Corey Kluber. The guy has been through a lot the past couple of seasons, and we were kind of dismissive of it last night with Spencer Turnbull. So I apologize to you, Spencer Turnbull. We should give you more credit because I still think it is something that is tough to do, to throw a no hitter. Is it easier now than ever before? Sure. But it still is an achievement, and we should look at it that way. So welcome into Fantasy Baseball Today. It's Thursday, May 20th. Frank Stanfield joined by Chris Towers. A few other things we have to talk about today. Starting pitchers who bounced back. Early round hitters who have struggled. We have to talk about Shohei Ohtani because, he was on the mound. Velocity was down. We'll talk about that. Some more bullpen updates. Is Chris worried about Emmanuel Clase? We're going to find out. Chris, you're in a good mood. You came in here today singing some Rick Astley, Never Gonna Give You Up.
Yeah. I was playing Warzone right before the game started, and that's one of the songs that plays when you're in a car in that game. So it just stuck in my head. Never gonna get.
That is awesome. Reminds me of my Grand Theft Auto Vice City days, way back in the day, when you're just driving around and they're playing
all-time the awesome soundtrack,
80s music or whatever they're playing. I should have been this age in the 80s, Chris, but we'll save that for another day. Let's talk about Corey Kluber, the Klubot. He throws the sixth no-hitter in baseball this season. Only reason I say six, Chris, is because the MLB is not recognizing Madison Bumgarner's seven-inning no-hitter. So you can argue it, but
yeah, there have been seven no-hitters this season.
Sure. And the second one in two nights, of course. But before we get into Corey Kluber specifically, let's just talk about no-hitters in general, because I saw an awesome stat that you put out last night, Chris. So let's talk about it from just like a macro level, like what's going on in baseball right now. Obviously, we know there are more shifts than ever before. BABIP is down. There's more strikeouts. And that's why we're seeing more no-hitters. But what was that awesome stat you had yesterday on Twitter?
Yeah, so this was yesterday. I believe the stat was, if you count Madison Bumgarner's no-hitter as a no-hitter, there have been as many no-hitters thrown by pitchers in Major League Baseball this season as there have been five-hit games by hitters. In the past five seasons, there had been 11 no-hitters and 113 five-hit games.
That's insane.
I mean, look, some of this is just random. Anytime you're talking about, I mean, obviously, like, the results of baseball games are not random individually. You know, each game is the result of the performance of the two separate teams and other factors involved. It's not random. There is, human involvement in them. But when you're talking about as a whole, the outcome of any given game is pretty random. And so anytime you're talking about effectively randomly distributed events, especially like a no-hitter, which is very rare, occasionally you will have a stretch where they cluster. And it doesn't necessarily mean anything. Sometimes things just happen. Last year during fantasy football season, I remember there was a point where Ezekiel Elliott had like 4 fumbles in 5 games or something like that. And he had... I did like a random distribution thing on Excel and I put his career fumble rate in there. And I just did like, here's what it would look like over 1,000 carries. And at one point, it was a totally random thing. At one point, there was a stretch of about 60 carries where he would have fumbled 4 times just with a completely random distribution. So these kinds of things can happen and not mean anything. They mean something right now. These are remarkable achievements. They are... Like Corey Kluber pitched extremely well tonight. Spencer Turnbull pitched extremely well last night. But what's happening is games that, you know, there's always been pitchers pitching extremely well. There's nothing new about that. No hitters seem to be happening more often because hits are happening less often, which is, you know, a very natural conclusion. But the weird thing is they've been clustered around 3 teams. Cleveland, Texas, and Seattle have all been no-hit twice now.
That is also very weird.
And that means that if you pitch against Cleveland, Seattle, or Texas, based on the results so far, you have a 5% chance of throwing a no-hitter. There is something random about that, but I don't think it is meaningless. And I don't want to say it's not impressive, and I don't want to take anything away from it. But what I will say is, I was watching Lost tonight with my wife. We're almost through season 6. I got the notification. Corey Kluber has a no-hitter through 8 innings. And we just kept watching the episode. And...
Well, that's because you're a Yankees hater, but we knew
exactly.
That.
I'm also famously biased against Spencer Turnbull because I did the same thing last night. And it's just because, like... I don't want to say they've lost their novelty for me, but...
I don't think it's crazy to say that, or there's anything wrong about saying that, Chris. I mean, when it happened this often, it's okay to say that it's lost its novelty.
If it was happening this often, but it was just because like 6 different pitchers had just been so freaking locked in, but it's happening this often, at least in part because of changes to the offensive environment around baseball. And unless Major League Baseball introduces a new ball in July, which
wouldn't surprise me.
They've done before.
Yeah.
I think it would be a really bad look if they did that midseason, since, you know, we're seeing some pretty extreme changes. This is the offensive environment we have to play with moving forward. And so it's kind of created an environment where there are more viable pitchers. And streaming is a more viable option. I feel like it's been, you know, I don't know if we tagged Spencer Turnbull as one of the streamers for that night. I was trying to think back to Tuesday's podcast, if we had, or Monday's podcast, if we had.
I'm not sure either.
But it definitely feels like, you know, kind of every night there's a streamer or two who just has like a random great performance in a way that hasn't necessarily been true. And maybe that's just what we're dealing with now, is that there's just more options at pitching.
Yeah, I mean, one of my biggest takeaways there is what you mentioned, the 3 teams that have been no-hit twice already, Cleveland, Seattle, and Texas. Those are teams that you should be streaming your pitchers against. If, you know, not everybody has got off to a great start in pitching this year in terms of if you play in a roto league or if you're struggling in a points league, you know, it's very likely that you have a rotation that includes Luis Castillo and Charlie Morton and Kenta Maeda and Kyle Hendricks. And if that's the case, then you're struggling at pitcher. And also, if that's the case, then you want to be streaming against those teams. So I think that is a big takeaway from all of this. Let's talk about Corey Kluber more in depth here. We're just going to make him the joint, oh my goodness gracious, player of the night.
Oh my goodness gracious.
He finishes with 9 strikeouts to just 1 walk. And he did get off to an extremely slow start this year. But as we kind of cautioned people while it was happening, April has been the worst month of his career consistently. He is a slow starter, and I don't think that would have been any different this year, coming off a year where he pitched one inning with the Texas Rangers last season, and he was limited by injury the year before as well. So over the last five starts for Corey Kluber, including tonight, a 1.79 ERA, which has coincided with his changeup usage going up. So that pitch has been great for him. So what do you think about Corey Kluber just in general, Chris? Right now, he is obviously rising up the rankings, and rightfully so. What should you consider selling high given his injury history? And for some reason, even after the start, he has a 4.17 xFIP, which when I dive into the numbers, I really don't see it. The walks are kind of high, but he gets an okay amount of ground balls. The swinging strikes are very high. If you're just looking at performance, I don't think you should sell high, but tell me what you think about Kluber.
My guess would be, and this is only a guess, but my guess would be that xFIP is either they haven't updated the, there's a constant number in xFIP for one league ERA, and then for xFIP, you have, it attempts to normalize home run to fly ball ratio. And so if it's normalizing for a 2019 home run to fly ball ratio, which is 15%, and he's got an 8.3 home run to fly ball ratio, it's going to overstate what his expected ERA should be. It's worth noting the league xFIP is 4.07, so right in line with the league ERA, which is 4.07. So does also tell you that, like, there used to be a time when if a guy had an ERA around 4, but he was getting a bunch of strikeouts, you'd be like, he's a fine fantasy option.
Not this year.
4 ERA is not good for fantasy anymore. 3.5 ERA is just pretty good. It's not going to get you anywhere close to first place, at least so far. So I'm a little less bullish. You know, it's hard for me to get as excited about a version of Corey Kluber who's at, you know, he's probably around 9% walk rate right now. But you know, he's, I think I had him, I need to move him up. I had him in 82nd at starting pitcher, and that's obviously too low. I can move him up to...
Whoa there. I have him at SP 45. Scott has him at SP 49.
Yeah, that's too high for me.
I just look at that range, and it's... Eduardo Rodriguez has slowed down, though the underlying numbers are still very good for him.
Yeah.
Sean Manaea has slowed down a little bit. Montas has been just... He's been mad.
Not good, yeah.
Zach Eflin is fine. He's okay. Like, Robbie Ray...
I like Zach Eflin more.
Robbie Ray has been pretty good.
But I like Robbie Ray a lot more.
I
think Robbie Ray has made some real changes that are benefiting him.
Sure, sure. No, that's fine. But I just think that if Kluber is healthy, which he's shown to this point, he's, you know, he's not Cy Young Kluber from 2, 3, 4 years ago. But can he be 80% of that, 85% of that? That's a top 50, maybe even a borderline top 40 starting pitcher. So
yeah, I'm slotting him in at 57, but I could be talked into higher. I could, you know, it's the kind of thing. I feel like a broken record at this point, but the specific ranking doesn't matter so much to me right now because we're still adjusting to this new offense environment and what it means. And so it's a lot harder for me to have a strong opinion about where anybody fits in right now, just because I don't know how much of what we've seen is for real. I don't know how much of guys who are struggling is just they're getting used to a different ball with different seam heights or whatever. You know, it's really hard. It's too early to say in the season anything definitively, really, especially because, like, with Kluber, he's changed his approach so much this season. You said he's throwing his changeup a ton more.
Yeah, I mean,
that hasn't historically been a great thing for him.
Yeah, he's kind of reinventing himself, which we've seen.
And anytime that happens, my concern is always, what does it look like? Like, he's made the counter. He wasn't being effective early. Hitters were hitting him hard. He's made a counter now.
Mm-hmm.
What does the counter to that counter look like? So far, you know, tonight was great. He gave up, what, 4 earned runs in his last start? I'm still inclined to be pretty skeptical of him. Yeah, he had... 4 earned runs in his most recent start, and 6 strikeouts, 3 walks in the one before that. So it's like 2 really good starts in his last 4, 1 pretty meh one, 1 that was okay. I think he's good. You know, my concerns about him just being finished, those are mostly gone now.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, we've seen really good stuff from Zach Eflin. We've seen really good stuff from Marcus Stroman. We've seen really good stuff from, you know, I don't really know where to put Zach Allen now, but he's above Kluber for now. We've seen really good stuff from Jameson Taillon. We've seen really good stuff from a lot of pitchers this season that makes it really, really hard to say any one guy is better than any other guy outside of, you know, the handful of really, really good proven guys.
Mm-hmm. So you would be all right trading him for one of these slow starting middling hitters, Lourdes Gurriel, someone who you like a lot. You would make that swap, Kluber for Gurriel.
I have a hard time seeing Kluber being so instrumental to my success moving forward that I can't move him for a need.
Mm-hmm. Gurriel, he did go 0-for-4 on Wednesday, but I believe he had four multi-hit games in a row before this one. So slowly coming on, and I pointed out yesterday, his best month in his career is June. So it looks like Gurriel could be ready to take off. How about someone like Charlie Blackmon? Would you be all right with that?
I think I probably would, but yeah. I wouldn't feel great about it.
Last one, Josh Donaldson. Spoke about him the other day.
Yeah, I would rather have Donaldson.
All right, so some people need offensive help in fantasy baseball right now. There is no doubt about that. Before we get to news and notes, just want to fire up the thurriometer. What is that? Well, it's the worryometer on a Thursday, duh. It's Shohei Ohtani was pitching. He was on the mound. He was up against Cleveland, 4 2/3, 2 earned, 2 walks, 5 strikeouts. So the command, the control was not terrible in this one. He finished with 11 swinging strikes. However, 91.3 miles per hour. He averaged on the fastball. Coming into Wednesday's start, he averaged 96.6 on the pitch. I do have some quotes. First from Joe Maddon. Said there is nothing wrong with Ohtani. He said the decreased velocity was just because, quote, he wasn't feeling his fastball tonight. Also added, you can see the velocity, and when that happens, coaches and managers and trainers start looking in his face to see if there's any wincing, any pain. There wasn't any of that. He came in and there was no indicators other than the gun on the scoreboard. Ohtani went on to say, quote, I'm not worried about any injuries. I think my body was just feeling really heavy and sluggish. So, thurriometer, Chris, on Ohtani in this start.
I have no idea how to answer that.
This is scary, man. I mean, a guy being down 5 miles per hour, and this is kind of what I meant. A couple of weeks ago, Chris, we spoke about how I don't want Ohtani to pitch. And it's not, he's awesome to watch. There's no doubt about it. When he's on, yes, I want to see him do both. But based on the contributions he gives you as a hitter, he runs into more injury risk than the average player because he's
just
on
the field more.
Yes.
Like that's just,
and it's
he has more opportunities to get hurt, even if you don't think he is more likely to get hurt than any other player per like opportunity.
Yeah.
The fact that they are, you know, seemingly pretty adamant there was nothing wrong, I'll be a coward and say it's a 5. And that's just, it could be really, really concerning or it could be nothing. And so I'll average the 2 out and say it's a 5. Because he was still really effective. And you know, given the control problems we've seen him have, it's not out of the question that, like, if he threw a little less hard, maybe he could be a more effective pitcher, you know, be less reliant on the fastball. Maybe there's something to that, but it sounds like this was just a weird game. And as long as, you know, he's feeling fine and he, you know, goes out on his bullpen day in 3 days or whatever it is, and, you know, there's no, oh, he, you know, felt a twitch or whatever, I guess I have to not be concerned.
Yeah. I think this is just a reminder to keep everybody grounded a little bit on Ohtani, as awesome as he is. And again, we talk about the guy seemingly every day on this podcast, and rightfully so. But this is, you know, this is part of the downside with Shohei Ohtani. So just keep that in mind. I wouldn't be going out and sending any, trying to trade him just because I'm scared of the situation. I still want to keep Ohtani on my team for what it's worth.
There was one interesting thing. He threw his cutter 23 times out of 72 pitches. That's a 32% rate. Coming into this start, it was 6%.
That is interesting.
I don't think he even had a cutter before this season. I'm not sure, you know, he didn't throw any curveballs. So I wonder if maybe the, you know, he does throw a slower slider. It's like 80 miles an hour. Tonight it was 78. Maybe the cutter is replacing the slider. Maybe the slider is replacing the curveball. I don't know. It's interesting. It's something to watch. We're watching every single like editor, English teacher, journalism advisor I've ever had in my life is going to cringe if they hear me say the most unique player in Major League Baseball history. And he's still figuring things out. You know, we're watching in real time this guy who, with, you know, a level of talent we've never seen before, figure out what he is. And he had one start previously where he threw the cutter 24% of the time. And otherwise, it's been like 5%. That was back on April 20th. So this is interesting. I'm not sure what to make of it, but it speaks to how absurdly talented he is that he seems to have just added a new pitch that he can work in and out of his repertoire.
The only good news, honestly, that came out of this was he was moved to right field after he pitched, which means he now has 3 appearances in the outfield. So if you play in a 5-game position eligibility league like we do on CBS, that means he is 2 pitcher starts away, because I assume they're going to continue to do this from getting outfield eligibility, which would be awesome. The PGA Championship is back at the Ocean Course at Kiawa Island Golf Resort in South Carolina, and you won't want to miss any of the action. To keep up with all of the drama, watch the PGA Championship for free on the CBS Sports app by visiting cbssports.com/PGA Championship via your Paramount Plus or TV login on a connected TV. Big weekend in the golf world, so make sure to check it out. Chris, we are 25 minutes in, and we've talked about 2 players, so we're really going to have to keep, we're going to have to be short on the rest of our analysis for the rest of the night, so keep that in mind. News and notes, Fernando Tatis returned off the COVID IL on Wednesday, and he reminded everybody of his stardom. He finished 4-for-4 with his 10th home run of the season, 2 doubles, and his 8th steal. Maybe the time away helped with the shoulder, obviously something he dealt with earlier, but either way, he looks perfectly fine, and I think he's the number 1 shortstop in fantasy. There you go. Hot take. Ketel Marte was activated from the IL, but did not start on Wednesday against the Dodgers, which Chris and I were talking before was kind of weird. I didn't really see a reason for it, but okay.
Yeah.
Jacob DeGrom played catch on Wednesday and will make a rehab start for Low A St. Lucie on Thursday, which means he will not start for the Mets at all this week. Noah Syndergaard allowed 1 hit with no walks while striking out 5 in 4 innings during his rehab start for Low A St. Lucie. Apparently, he was sitting 93 to 95 miles per hour. He averaged 97.7 miles per hour on his fastball back in 2019. It's his first start coming off Tommy John surgery, so yeah, I'm not freaking out, but it's probably going to tick up, I would assume, for Syndergaard. Pete Alonso was out of the lineup due to a sore left wrist. Framber Valdez will make another rehab start on Saturday for Triple A Sugarland. I love the name of that team. That is just
the Sugarland Skeeters, right?
Is that their mascot name? The Skeeters?
Am I thinking of a different team?
Oh, no, I think you're right. Yep, that sure is. The Sugarland Skeeters.
Yeah, Sugarland Skeeters. That's one of my favorite. I mean, so many great minor league team names, but yeah.
What is
Sugarland Skeeters is a great one.
What is that? Following
it's a mosquito.
Oh, do most people know that?
Or Doug Funny's best friend.
Following Wednesday's game, the Rockies optioned infielder Alan Trejo to AAA. This sounds like Brendan Rodgers will be called up on Friday. He is 29% rostered, only has second base eligibility as of now for the Rockies. Chris, what leagues should Brendan Rodgers be rostered in right now?
12-team roto leagues for sure.
Yep.
And yeah, I think that's probably it. I'm not so sure about points leagues or, you know, a shallower categories-based roster like a Yahoo league where you're not necessarily using a middle infielder, but he is second base eligible only right now, I believe. And that alone could make him a viable starting option. I mean, shortstop's been a little worse than we expected too, but that's true of every position. But, you know, second base might be the position where I've certainly had the hardest time finding guys. And, you know, hopefully he plays regularly. He should be I mean, the best case scenario is not, maybe not, I don't want to make the Trevor Story comparison, but, you know, a good batting average, good power, good speed guy. Like, he has all of those tools. He's someone who, coming up as a prospect, there was talk, you know, he could be a future batting average, batting title contender with Coors Field as his home park. So, you know, he could be a very, very good player.
Yeah, let's say he plays, this is optimistic because he would need to remain healthy, but if he plays 100 games the rest of the way, if he can hit 280 with 10 to 12 homers, 6 to 8 steals, something like that, I think that is doable for Brendan Rodgers. So just to give you some kind of idea of what we are expecting, he does have shortstop eligibility on Yahoo. So there you go. Alex Kirilloff began a rehab assignment at AAA on Wednesday. Twins manager Rocco Baldelli said Kenta Maeda should be good to go in their upcoming series against Cleveland. Eric Fetty and Tanner Rainey were placed on the COVID IL for the Nationals. Chris, your boy Eric Fetty, man, in the Scott White Dynasty League, he was carrying your team. I think you really need to make a trade for multiple starting pitchers. I'm just going to
throw
that out. I
mean, things are really falling apart right now because I just lost Mike Trout, too. I think Chris Taylor might be out for a long time, right? Yeah, this
Chris,
it's things could be taking a real negative turn for your guy Chris.
It sounds like you can really use Jose Berríos, Drew Smyly, and Lourdes Gurriel. Just gonna throw it out there. I sent an offer that's currently pending, but sounds like you could really use those guys. Alex Cobb will be activated and start Thursday against the Twins. Dylan Moore was placed on the IL.
There's no way you would do Pablo Lopez instead of Drew Smyly, right?
I think it's just too much for me to give up, man. I know that was your original offer, but it's a lot. It's too much. Miles Michaelis is set to make his season debut on Saturday against the Cubs as he returns from a shoulder injury. He is 23% rostered. He has not pitched in a regular season game since 2019. Chris, any interest in Miles Michaelis?
Given how many starting pitchers there are who are viable right now, he's pretty low on the totem pole.
Fair enough. Taijuan Walker was placed on the IL with left side tightness. Michael Pineda was placed on the IL after having that procedure on his thigh yesterday. Will Myers could return from the COVID IL this weekend. Gleyber Torres returned on Wednesday and was batting fifth for the Yankees. The Braves demoted. I don't get this one. I picked up Tucker Davidson in a few leagues, but the Braves demoted him back to AAA after his quality start on Tuesday. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe he'll be back. The Rays placed Luis Patino on the IL with a right middle finger laceration. And for those in dynasty leagues, the Orioles' first-round pick from last year, Heston Kjerstad, is gradually getting back into shape and remains without a clear timetable to make his professional debut. He was diagnosed with a heart condition last fall. So anyone, if you have him in dynasty, that is the latest news on Heston Kjerstad. What we're going to do is take a quick break, but when we return, some starting pitchers who had some big bounce-back performances on Wednesday. We'll do it next on Fantasy Baseball Today. Live Nation presents Concert Week. From now through May 14th, get $25 tickets to over 5,000 summer shows. That's up to 75% off a summer full of your favorite artists like 21 Savage, Alanis Morissette, Cage the Elephant, Janet Jackson, Meghan Trainor, Peso Pluma, Sean Paul, Sum 41, and many more for way less. Grab your tickets now through May 14th to see all of the artists you love all summer long for just $25 each. Visit LiveNation.com/Concert Week to buy now. That's LiveNation.com/Concert Week to buy now. Worn by players like Michael Harris to meet the demand of elite ball players, the New Balance Fuel Cell 4040 V7 is a versatile option. The 4040 V7 is built for the athlete who needs responsiveness and ability to cut and run at their full speed. The model features a fuel cell foam underfoot and a synthetic and mesh upper to provide breathability, comfort, and a snug fit as you round the bases. The fuel cell midsole features nitrogen-infused foam specifically designed to propel athletes forward. Learn more about the 4040 at newbalance.com. Let's start off with Lucas.
Frank, you got yourself a gosh darn deal.
We did? It went through?
Oh, whatever. Who needs prospects? Oh. Who needs Trevor Rodgers?
All right.
I could be dead before the 2022 season.
All right. So
I don't even know what Austin Hendrick looks like.
People are probably wondering what just happened. So in the Scott White Dynasty League, there's a 24 team head to head points league. I traded Chris a $15 Jose Berríos, I think $7 or $8 Drew Smyly, $8. And a $5 Lourdes Gurriel for a $1 Trevor Rogers and Austin Hendrick.
Austin Hendrick and Brett Beatty.
And Brett Beatty, prospect, who both have their minor league status still in this league. So it's a very complicated dynasty league. It's deep, 24 team head-to-head points. My team is terrible. That's all you need to know. It's a rebuilding team. I have Wander Franco, so I'm waiting on that. But Chris is kind of in the thick of things, so nice.
I mean, I'm in like third place right now.
Yeah, no, you're getting it done, dude. Let's go into Lucas Giolito. He had his best start of the season on Wednesday at the Twins. 8 innings pitched, 2 hits, 1 run, 3 walks, 11 strikeouts, 17 swinging strikes on 111 pitches. And it was a huge bounce back for his changeup. I know that you recently wrote about starting pitchers and their main pitches, basically, that are struggling. So you could talk a little bit more about that, Chris. But he threw the changeup a season-high 41% of the time. 13 of his 17 swinging strikes came on that pitch for Lucas Giolito.
Yeah, and you know, the key thing that has really held him back so far has been his slider. He had a 53% whiff rate with that pitch in 2020. It was just 31% entering this game, and he had been getting crushed by righties. 866 OPS allowed, compared to a 670 OPS, a 680 OPS allowed in the previous two seasons. So that had been a real issue for him. You know, the slider, it wasn't like a knockout pitch. He only got 3 whiffs on 20 pitches, but 3 whiffs on 8 strikes or swings is a 38% whiff rate and 65 mile per hour average exit velocity, only 2 balls in play. So, you know, it's still too small a sample size to say that he's figured something out, but given the track record, I'm pretty confident he's going to be very, very good moving forward.
Yep. It looks like the buy low window has closed for Giolito. The walks have been the biggest issue for him this year. He's given up some home runs as well. So still had 3 walks in this game. I would like to see him shore those things up. But the fact that they let him throw 111 pitches, he looked like that ace workhorse that we were all hoping for coming into the season. Again, Lucas Giolito there. Big Joe, Joe Musgrove, baby. He's back against the Colorado Rockies. They were on the road. Okay. It was in Petco Park. Sure. 7 shutout, 2 hits. 0 walks, 11 strikeouts, 18 swinging strikes on 93 pitches for Joe Musgrove. It was his first quality start since April 19th. And I think we needed this one, Chris, because some people, their confidence in him was starting to waver a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, you know, kind of rightly so, given, you know, how mediocre he had been really kind of since that no hitter, you know, when he threw 114 pitches, I think, and given how much of an outlier the start to the season was. But this was a very good start, even accounting for the fact that, you know, the Rockies, I'll just say I'm surprised the Rockies haven't been no hit on the road yet.
We're getting close.
Yeah, but no, this was a very good start. He's had a bit of bad luck being 4-4. That'll hurt you in a points league. But you know, all in all, a very promising start that should make you feel better about him. Even if you shouldn't have necessarily felt that much worse about him.
Same thing could be said for Charlie Morton, who we have been waiting and waiting, much like Luis Castillo, to see something. And we saw it against the Mets, a Mets lineup that is, again, it's barren, lots of injuries, lots of underperformance. Francisco Lindor, we'll talk about him in a little bit, but he's been just awful this season. Anyway, Charlie Morton finished with 8 strikeouts over 6 innings of 1-run ball, 0 walks. It was his first quality start since April 20th. He had 14 swinging strikes on only 79 pitches, which I found a little interesting. 9 of those swinging strikes did come on the curve. The underlying numbers all along, they've looked great for Charlie Morton. So that's kind of why we've been pounding the table for him as a buy low, Chris. But after this start, the ERA still stands at 4.60. The FIP, 3.89. The XFIP, 3.46. So I stand by it. I think more starts like this are coming for Charlie Morton.
I haven't moved him outside of like my top 25 or 26. There have been a couple of guys who've moved ahead of him, but for the most part, I haven't really touched him yet. I'm almost positive he's still in my top 30. So I'm very confident in Charlie Morton moving forward.
Two other pitchers who bounced back on Wednesday, Aaron Civale at the Angels. No Mike Trout in the lineup anymore, so maybe this is a more favorable lineup to pitch against, but he went 7. He allowed 2 runs, 1 walk, 8 strikeouts. That was a season high in strikeouts and a season high with 16 swinging strikes for Aaron Civale in this one. He has gone 6-plus innings in 7 of 9 starts. Zach Eflin bounced back against the Marlins. He allowed 2 runs over 6 with 6 strikeouts. Anything you'd like to add, Chris, on Savale or Eflin?
No, I think Savale is probably pitching over his head with a 3.30 ERA, and I think, but I think he'll be a solid starter moving forward. He's him and Zach Plesac still right next to each other in my rankings, and forever linked they will be, right around the 45 range. And Eflin, I'm pretty sure his peripherals are even better than his 3.77 ERA. I know, you know, that wouldn't be necessarily an elite or even very good ERA this season, but 3.00 FIP, 3.13 XFIP. I would imagine the XERA is in that same range because it was coming into the start. All in all, very encouraging. I think we have not given Eflin his due on this podcast. I have him 49th. I'm not sure why he shouldn't at least be, you know, where Savala and Plesac are. I feel like we mentioned him recently in a conversation and there's a little bit of dismissiveness, but he's just really solid, man. He's been weirdly inconsistent as a pitcher, as in, like, we don't know what kind of pitcher he is because he kind of keeps changing every year, but I think he's good.
I think that's fair. Yeah. We probably have not given Eflin enough due this year. He has not really changed up the pitch mix much. He's throwing the change up a little bit more this year, but he does have, it looks like he throws 5 different pitches at least 10% of the time. So the arsenal is a little bit deeper this year than ever before for Eflin. And the biggest key for him, 57 strikeouts to 5 walks. This is by far the best control we've ever seen from him. Not that he's ever been a bad control pitcher, but 0.78 walks per 9 after this start. Last year, that was at 2.3. The year before, it was at 2.6. So just stellar control from Zach Eflin so far this season. Chris, let's take a look at some struggling early round hitters. We've got some emails recently asking about some of these guys, so I felt like it was time to just bunch them all together and kind of talk about what our confidence level is in these guys getting back on track. And we'll start with Trevor Story, who went 0-for-4 on Wednesday. The counting stats, they still look fine. 24 runs scored, 21 RBI, 4 home runs. I think that's a little bit low for Trevor Story, but he still has 7 steals, so he's helped you out there. Only batting .258. So the batting average and the power in particular, Chris, down a little bit. Doesn't have as much protection in the lineup. Nolan Arenado no longer there. One of the biggest things I noticed for him, he's got a 776 OPS at Coors Field this season.
Yeah.
He's got a 978 career OPS in Coors. So it seems like that's been down so far this season. What's your confidence level in Trevor Story getting back on track?
On a scale of 1 to 10, I would say I'm a 9. He doesn't really, like, nothing looks different. He's actually got an identical ex-woba to what he did last season. It's 10 points behind 2019. And his actual woba is nearly 50 points lower than 2020 and over 50 points lower than 2019. He's the kind, like, you should expect him to outperform his ex-woba because of Coors Field. So I think he'll be fine. His strikeout rate is not alarming. His walk rate's where it should be. He's hitting the ball about as hard as ever. I don't have any concerns about Trevor Story.
The only other thing that stood out to me for Story is that his ground ball rate is up a tad. It's 36%, but that is not egregious by any means.
It
affects the overall numbers a little bit. I think if those turn into... 30,
yeah.
If those,
it was 30% last year, it was 34% the year before. So that's one of those, like I was talking about earlier, that can happen randomly without any actual change.
And I think it was a good point that you brought up about Rockies hitters. When you look at their StatCast page, if you do, baseballsavant.com, some people actually ask, that's the website if you want to look up StatCast numbers.
Yeah.
But they're always going to, the expected numbers are always going to be worse for Rockies hitters because I guess the StatCast algorithm just doesn't really factor in Coors Field. It's a unique place. I mean, there's just no doubt about it. There's such a bump.
That specifically impacts the way the ball moves. You know, that is one of the specific ways in which Coors Field, and I think it has the largest outfield in baseball, which is probably also pretty hard to account for when you're talking about hit probability.
Let's take a look at Juan Soto, Chris. He had 3 hits, including his 4th home run on Wednesday. He is batting .290, but we have received some emails asking if the shoulder might still be an issue. And maybe it is, because he usually hits too many ground balls, Juan Soto. But this year, it's all the way up to 59%, and not every shoulder injury is created equal, but we have seen shoulder injuries sap power, and you know, cause something like this to happen. So what is your worryometer on Juan Soto, Chris?
I think it's got to be like a one. Yeah. Just because, like, if they came out and said, yeah, his shoulder's bothering him, it's going to be an issue all the rest of the season, I would probably have to be a little higher. But, you know, one, you would think the left shoulder for a left-handed hitter would be less important for their swing. You know, obviously that is something that you could see affecting a hitter's launch angle. But, you know, and just thinking about how you swing, I feel like that would be more, I guess it could, your back shoulder could impact your ability to get loft. I guess I could see that. But I don't know. He's mostly still hitting the ball as hard as he ever has. He was never going to be as good as he was last season. That was, you know, a really, really ridiculously good 40-something games for him. But there's no reason to think he won't continue to be one of the best hitters in baseball moving forward. All of his underlying numbers suggest that.
Yep. His expected batting average is .315. His expected slug is .545. This is Juan Soto that we're talking about here. And something that I say all the time, Chris, about a hitter who hits too many ground balls is they need to maintain a very high exit velocity on fly balls and line drives in particular. And this season, Juan Soto has a 100.4 mile per hour average exit velocity on those batted balls, which is actually better than it was last year. So I do think more power is coming for Juan.
He is second in baseball. Yeah. He doesn't qualify for the leaderboard, but he would be just ahead of Rafael Devers if he did it at Giancarlo Stanton, obviously number one.
My boy, Manny Machado, he went 0 for 4 on Wednesday, but he is batting .225 with a .716 OPS. He has saved his season by running more. He has 6 steals already in just 43 games now it is. He has 6 home runs. Counting stats still look fine. It's a great lineup, so I don't think those things are going to go away. His expected numbers, not nearly as good. And I think, Chris, he's gone back to hitting more fly balls than he did last year. Last year, 22% line drive rate. That was by far a career high. He's got back to hitting a few more ground balls and a few more fly balls. He's always hit a lot of fly balls. And that helped him in Camden. And with that ball that we continuously talk about, I just think that those are kind of turning into lazy fly ball outs. So I'm not as confident in the batting average now for Machado moving forward than I was coming into the season.
It's something we talk about a lot in you know, this modern era when we, you know, have the Baseball Savant page open is like launch angle. And his launch angle slightly down from last year, but it was 15.6 degrees in 2020, 14.2 right now. The thing about an average is it's a collection of a bunch of different numbers, and then you divide by the numerator or whatever. If you hit a bunch of batted balls at 20 degrees of launch angle, that's really, really good. If you hit, you know, a third of them at 20, a third of them at 8, and a third of them at 32, you're going to have the same average, but the consistency isn't going to be there. And so that's what we're seeing from him, I think. It's just he's, like you said, a few more ground balls, a few more fly balls, and they're coming out of that line drive bucket. And that's what you don't want to see. But he's also, like, he's got an 11.5% home run to fly ball rate, even accounting for the new ball. That's just bad luck. Manny Machado should be at least 15%. So he's lost a couple of homers like that. All in all, I think there's very little reason to be too concerned about him. And I would be trying to make some buy low offers if anybody's worried.
I could see final numbers similar to what he did in 2019, Chris. 256, 32 homers, 81 runs. Actually, no, the counting stats are going to be better. I could see him approaching 200 runs plus RBIs, maybe even exceeding that. He only had 5 steals in that 2019 season. He already has more than that. So he's probably going to wind up in somewhere in that 12 to 15 range. Yeah, maybe a little bit more. But I do think 250 to 260 is probably where we settle in for Manny Machado on the batting average this year. Francisco Lindor, we've been waiting and waiting and waiting. He went 0 for 4 on Wednesday. He's batting .189 with a .582 OPS. In 96 games since the start of 2019, he's batting .236 with a .696 OPS. Now, there is nothing right now in the underlying numbers, Chris, that says Lindor is going to be much better. He's going to be better because he's not going to hit .189, but there's nothing there. But he also
There's nothing in the underlying numbers that necessarily says, wow, he looks broken. You know, like, he's not striking out all that much. His average exit velocity, right around where it should be. His hard hit rate, actually a little higher, but that's normal given the ball that we're playing with. I'm not saying that there's no reason to be concerned, and I'm not dismissing his struggles so far. And I'm not saying there are specific, I can't point to something and say that right there, that is how Francisco Lindor is going to turn this around. It's kind of like Luis Castillo, where the pitcher, not the former Marlins, Mets, and Twins second baseman, where like it just kind of looks like he's not playing well. And his zone swing,
the batted ball data is it's weird, Chris. It's weird. 13% line drive rate, that's by far a career low. Last year was 25%. 49% ground ball rate, that's high.
Yeah.
12% infield fly ball rate. It's not the highest mark of his career, but it's three times as much as it was last year.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, based on what he did in 2019, we might just still be holding on to that season. Kind of what we said about Blake Snell recently. We might just be holding on to that with Francisco Lindor. I still think he's a fantastic player. I'm not taking anything away from him. But 32 home runs, that came in a season with the juiced ball. I just think that we're probably not going to come anywhere close to that again. He's not a 195 hitter, for sure. But he also used to hit like not even a decent amount of fly balls. I don't know. The batted ball data is weird. He's bounce back, but my confidence level is not as high as it was a month ago.
He's kind of always been a player who's been a little hard to figure out. And, you know, it could be a situation where he was maximizing his home run potential with a juiced ball in a way that can't be sustained now, because it's not like he has, you know, massive raw power where he's blasting 420 foot shots. But it, like I said, it reminds me of Luis Castillo, where it just kind of looks like he's just a little off. He's swinging at fewer pitches inside the strike zone, but he's also swinging at fewer pitches outside of the strike zone. So that's hard to make sense of. My sense is he'll be fine. You know, maybe if we redrafted, I wouldn't rank him as a top 25 player anymore, but I wouldn't be selling him for like seventh round value right now. I would still, I think if you have Luis Castillo or Francisco Lindor, your only option is to hold.
For sure. You have to hold him because you're not going to get anything close to the investment that you paid. And I don't think that he's going to return an investment anywhere close to the second or third round pick that you used on him. What is the highest rank? Say you have a ton of starting pitchers on your team, Chris, and a bunch of depth there. Who is the highest ranked starting pitcher that you would offer for Francisco Lindor that is realistic to acquire him?
My rankings are very different from everyone else's, so that's a little bit of a hard exercise to do. But
do you think, so like Kevin Gausman had another great start on Wednesday, and he's got a sub-2 ERA. Do you think Kevin Gausman gets it done for Lindor if you sent that trade offer? Would you do it?
I think so. I think you could absolutely do that, and I'm not sure that I would do that.
You wouldn't give up your Gausman to get Lindor?
No, but I don't think I would need to. I think Lindor moving forward would be the more valuable player. But I think, and looking at my trade chart, like I do have Lindor ahead of Gausman. So, you know, if you want to go by that, I'm a liar.
Liar.
But there is a difference between my sober, rational, you know, attempt at valuing players and saying this is what I think they will be worth moving forward. That's how I do my trade chart. I do it like my auction values in the preseason. Perception is very, very different from what I'm trying to do. And so I don't think you have, I think Lindor will be better than Gausman the rest of the season, but I wouldn't necessarily do that trade unless I really, really, like if I got off to an awful start with my hitting and I needed a spark. That is the kind of thing that if Lindor does hit, I mean, that could go a long way to turning your season around.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I don't know. I'm struggling with this question.
Would you give up John Means?
I would hope I wouldn't have to. I'm thinking more like
Julio Urias.
If I could get him for, I don't think I would do that either.
Oh man.
But I'm saying that is in like I would rather, like, I would think I could do Aaron Civale for him. And I would definitely do that.
I agree with you, but I don't think, and even a Lindor fantasy manager who is struggling in pitching, I don't think that they would accept Civale. That's just...
I think that's, it's really hard.
Yeah. Freddy Peralta, like, would you do that?
I would do that, yes. Because I do have questions about, one, how sustainable what Peralta is doing, and two, how many innings he's going to do while doing it.
All right, let's move on. We had a pair of double dongs on Wednesday. Trey Mancini had 3 hits, and he now leads baseball with 38 RBI. So shout out to Mancini. Got off to a bit of a slow start, but he is really coming along. I moved him inside my top 15 first baseman, inside my top 35 outfielders, and 100% deserved. Trey Mancini looks a lot like the player he was back in 2019. Randy Arozarena also had a double dong. He's now up to 6 home runs, so he's lagging a little bit there. But he's coming around. And just a reminder, spoke about this the other day, he has lowered his ground ball rate from 67% in April to 41% in May. We hadn't seen that come to fruition yet, but on Wednesday it did. And it helps playing in Camden Yards, of course. So there you go. Some nice double dongs from Trey Mancini and Randy Arozarena. A few names that might be available on your waiver wire. Do you want them? Kike Hernandez had 3 hits with his 5th home run of the season. He returned on Tuesday and has led off both games for the Red Sox as expected. 33% rostered. Chris, I don't think Kike Hernandez is like a great player. I just think his lineup context is great, man. Like, if you're leading off for the Red Sox, I kind of feel like his roster rate needs to be higher than 33%.
He needs to hit better than he has so far is what it comes down to. In an ideal world, yeah. Like the leadoff hitter for the Red Sox should be an incredibly valuable player, but that hasn't really been the case for him so far. If he can be a high 700s OPS bat, which I think he's at 767 right now. So if he can be a little higher than that, especially in the OBP, that's where you would really want him to be better, because 308 OBP, you're not going to get to take advantage. If anything, that might be a worse spot for him to be hitting it. You'd rather him hitting 5th if he's going to be a 300 OBP 460 slug guy.
For some reason,
he's not going to. Yeah.
Go ahead and finish your point.
Oh, he's not going to score as many runs as he quote unquote should from that spot.
For some reason, Alex Cora just has so much confidence in him and loyalty. Yeah. He's as long as Kike Hernandez has been healthy this year, he's been in that spot. So worth mentioning, the Red Sox only play 5 games next week. So if you are someone who likes to chase volume, that's not the case for Hernandez. These 2 hitters could be available in deeper leagues. Are you interested, Chris? Jonathan VR has 3 home runs and 2 steals over his last 7 games. He is triple eligible on CBS. 2nd, 3rd, and shortstop. 28% rostered. Gregory Polanco went 2-for-3 on Wednesday, hit his 4th home run, added 3 RBI. He now has 8 hits over his last 7 games, and he even picked up his first hit against a lefty. He is now 1-for-21 against lefties this season. But he has 4 homers and 4 steals in just 32 games. So Polanco's kind of coming around, Chris. Any interest in VR or Polanco?
VR should probably be rostered in any roto league that's deeper than 12 teams or 12 teams or deeper. Just because of the stolen base potential and the fact that he is playing so much now and likely will moving forward, given all the injuries on the Mets, at least for the next couple of weeks, you would think. So, yeah, I mean, the stolen base potential, he could swipe 6 or 7 bags in the next 2 weeks, and it doesn't matter what else he does. That's going to have value. Polanco, I've got a lot of outfield problems in a lot of leagues. I'm currently starting Enrique Hernandez after I just added him while we were talking. And Ahmed Rosario in one league where I'm somehow competitive.
I love how I brought up Enrique Hernandez and you kind of poo-pooed it and then you added him.
Well, you know, that's...
what?
Situations being what they are. Actually, yeah. I would prefer not to have to rely to add Gregory Polanco in that league. And I'm not going to do it right now, but you know, a couple more good games, maybe.
I want to talk about Garrett Richards. He was at the Blue Jays, 6 2/3, 7 hits, 2 runs, 4 walks, 5 strikeouts. He now has allowed 2 runs or less in 4 of his last 5 starts. This is Garrett Richards, 35% rostered. Chris, any interest in Garrett Richards?
he's kind of been pretty good all year, but not great at any points really. So it would have to be probably deeper than 12 teams for me to be rushing out to get him, unless it's a two-star week next week, which it might be. Oh, they only play five times, so it probably won't be.
No, it won't be. He is a one-star pitcher against the Braves next week.
Could be a two-star pitcher the following week.
Yeah. Don't love the matchup there for Garrett Richards, but if you want to stash in advance. Logan Gilbert. Oh, man, we waited 58 minutes to talk about Logan Gilbert, but he wasn't really good. Again, his second start of the season against
talk about.
The Detroit Tigers. He has had two prime matchups against Cleveland and against Detroit. He allowed three runs over 2 2/3. He only threw 43 strikes out of his 74 pitches. We've got a hold here, right, Chris? We have to be patient with Logan Gilbert.
Yeah, I think you want to give him some time. The command wasn't there today. You know, from what I saw, he was having a lot of trouble with his breaking balls, especially. He's got that slider and the knuckle curve. You know, the fastball's, you know, a little harder than I think we expected it to be coming in. It wasn't quite as hard this start as it was last time, only 93.8 miles per hour. But I would still be holding. You know, he's outside of my top 60 at starting pitcher right now, whereas he was someone who probably could have moved up really quickly if he had gotten off to a good start.
Let's quickly wrap up with the call to the pen. Some very interesting bullpen updates on Wednesday for the Giants in a 1-0 game. Jake McGee pitched in the eighth inning. Then the Giants scored three runs in the ninth, so it was no longer a save opportunity, but clearly they were saving Tyler Rogers for the ninth to face the top of the order. So do you think we are closer to Tyler Rogers just being the guy, Chris, or do you think this is still a matchup-based situation because it's Gabe Kapler, yada, yada, yada?
I think he is the most likely person to get the next save for the Giants.
Tyler Rogers.
You know, Tyler Rogers, yes.
Okay. For the Tampa Bay Rays, Diego Castillo recently returned from injury. He was used in the eighth with a three-run lead to face the 5, 6, and 7 in the lineup. Pete Fairbanks was used in the ninth. He converted the save but did allow a run. Pete Fairbanks is only 17% rostered, Chris. Diego Castillo's usage has kind of been weird since he's returned from the IL. Do you think they're just slowly ramping him up? Who do you think gets the next save opportunity there, Castillo or Fairbanks?
I think it's probably Castillo. You know, I'm not... Did Fairbanks even get half of the save when Castillo was out?
No, he didn't get a single one.
Yeah, so I think Castillo's got to be the choice. I mean, he might not be, you know, maybe you take the field over him for the first one, but I would say he's most likely to get more of the next 5 or 10.
I would not be dropping Diego Castillo, but I think... No. With his injury, the timing of his injury, they've kind of fallen back into like Tampa Bay Rays ways. So,
but it could just be like he could go out and strike out three in his next outing, and they're like, all right, we're going back to him.
Yeah, definitely. Or it could be we're going to have five different saves from five different relievers over the next 2 weeks for the Tampa Bay Rays. For Cleveland, I don't know, Chris. I don't know. Is it happening? Yeah. Emmanuel Class A, he was used in the eighth in a 3-2 game to face the bottom of the lineup, 8, 9, and 1 in the order. James Karinchak used in the ninth for the save, his second save in as many days, and Emmanuel Classe was not used last night, and he hadn't pitched for like 4 days before that. So he was available. Is it happening? Is Karinchak becoming the closer here?
Seems like it might be. You know, I can't say for sure. And after the game, Terry Francona did give Emmanuel Classe the vote of confidence. He did say, you know, he is our closer, but there was something about like there were lefties coming up or something. I don't know exactly. I don't know which one of them is better against lefties. This is an amazing problem for the Cleveland Indians to have. I think Brian Shaw has also been really good for them, kind of out of nowhere. They've got a really good bullpen. Yeah, Brian Shaw has an ERA below 2. It's a pretty terrible situation for fantasy players unless they're willing to just give Karinchak the job. That would be bad for me with all of my shares of Emmanuel Classe. But Classe has walked 6 in his previous 3 appearances before this. So, you know, that could be playing a part in their thinking. And maybe it's just if he settles down, they'll go back to him. I don't know.
Let's wrap up here, Chris, with to stream or not to stream. We'll start with Thursday, Dane Dunning versus the Yankees, Johnny Cueto at the Reds, Drew Smyly versus the Pirates, Vince Velasquez versus the Marlins, Luis Garcia at Oakland, and Cole Irvin versus the Astros.
Garcia and Smyly stand above the pack, I think, for this group of pitchers. And then famous last words, I'll take Vince Velasquez.
I knew it was coming. And it's
just that has never worked out well.
Yeah. It's hard to blame you, right? It's, you know, the Marlins are another team you want to stream against.
But yeah, I mean, it's Vince Velasquez. Like, if there is one pitcher who specifically has never worked out for me in fantasy, it might be Vince Velasquez.
Let's take a look forward to Friday to stream or not to stream. And man, I am looking through. This is not a great group. Let's see. James Caprillion at the Angels. Jose Urania at the Royals. Mike Minor versus the Tigers. Tyler Anderson at the Braves. Adrian Hauser at the Reds. Jeff Hoffman versus the Brewers. Tristan McKenzie versus the Twins. This is a very bad group, Chris.
Yeah, I kind of like undecided against the Orioles. He could be pretty good.
Yeah, that's the thing is there's so many.
Undecided versus the Marlins also could have a very undecided versus the Indians.
We have a lot
of all those guys.
We have a lot of TBDs as of now.
Undecided's going to have a great day on Friday. Gosh, I really want to say Tyler Anderson. He's been really good. I actually have him in a bunch of leagues. Braves have not been good against righties this season, but
Tyler Anderson's Tyler Anderson's a lefty, Chris.
Oh, yeah.
Not that. Right. I mean, I'm sure you don't watch like every Tyler Anderson start.
Was I thinking of Chase Anderson? I think I was thinking of Chase Anderson my head.
Similar.
Tyler Anderson has been good. His peripherals are actually better than I think he's gotten credit for. I guess I would go with him against the Braves as my top one.
Minor had a good start his last time out. He's going up against Detroit. I don't think Mike Minor's good, but I'd probably go with him. And
yeah,
I like what I saw from James Caprillion. He's probably not going to give you a lot of volume, but I would put him third on that list.
Yeah, Angels with no Trout.
Yeah,
that's not a bad place to be.
All right, for Chris, I am Frank. Thank you all for listening and watching Fantasy Baseball Today. We'll be back again tomorrow. Bye-bye. If you've ever been in the market for a new home, you know home shopping can be a lot. There's so much you don't know and so much you need to know. What are the neighborhoods like? What are the schools like? Who is the agent who knows the listing or neighborhood best? And why can't all this information just be in one place? Well, now it is on Homes.com. As somebody who's been through this, I can tell you these features are so, so incredibly valuable. They've got comprehensive neighborhood guides and detailed reports about local schools, and their agent directory helps you see the agent's current listings and sales history. The area you live in is just as important as the house itself. You can get to know a neighborhood without ever setting foot in it. Say you're a really active person. You could find out about the nearest parks. Do they have a baseball field? Maybe you want to join a softball league like Chris and I play in. Also, Homes.com collaboration tools makes it easier than ever to share all this information with your family. It's a whole cul-de-sac of home shopping information all at your fingertips. Homes.com. We've done your homework.